Today's blog, February 9th, 2026, echoes of Nazi elections. The echoes are getting louder. We are not Germany of the 1930s, but totalitarian and fascist would-be dictators operate within consistent goals and exploit opportunities. President Trump is not hiding his desire to end free and open elections to solidify his kleptocracy with its fascist undercurrents. Knowing how the Weimar Republic collapsed in February and March of 1933 may give us insights. It seems, after all, that it is giving insights to those working towards Trump's agenda. The Reichstag fire. On February 27, 1933, Germany's parliament, the Reichstag, was set on fire. Although a single arsonist was blamed and executed, Dutch communist Marianus van der Lubbe, evidence suggests the Nazis set the fire. It was 1 week before the federal elections, and Hitler was desperate to gain a majority of the vote that had consistently been denied him. Hitler may have been unaware of the planned attack on the Reichstag and was enraged as he arrived on scene. Hermann Göring, president of the Reichstag, whose paramilitary unit was seen in the vicinity, rushed over and convinced Hitler to let him team up with the brown shirts to destroy Hitler's opposition on the left. Hitler, seemingly taking the attack as a personal affront, ranted, "Now there's no mercy. Every communist functionary will be shot where he's found. The communist members of the Reichstag must be hanged this very night," he raged. The Berlin police hesitated. But the arson attack gave Hitler the opportunity to establish a police state. It would take time to take over and coordinate German police forces, which were decentralized and locally controlled. Steps toward a police state. When Hitler had been given power in January of 1933, the process of police radicalization began. Police were rewarded for targeting Hitler's enemies, the Social Democrats, communists, and others. 10 days before the Reichstag fire, Göring instructed Prussian police forces, where Berlin is, to work with right-wing paramilitaries to suppress communists and indeed kill them if necessary. There would only be punishment for failing to do so. Less than a week before the Reichstag fire, paramilitaries, especially the brown shirts, were deputized as auxiliary policemen. As they roamed the streets, they rounded up any perceived enemies and created the first network of wild concentration camps. Officially, they were patrolling to make the streets safe to vote in the upcoming March 5th elections. But few were fooled that their intent was simply to intimidate. Emergency power. The next day, Chancellor Hitler convinced President Hindenburg to use Article 48 of the Weimar Constitution to rule by decree, not through the Reichstag, to reestablish law and order. The cynical so-called decree for the protection of folk, the people, and the state, or the Reichstag fire decree, suspended civil rights, forbade communist meetings, allowed the central government to overrule state and local laws, and even overthrow state and local governments. Targeted the media, the courts, allowed the government to intervene in private life without warrants. And President Hindenburg approved a vague protective custody law to imprison political dissenters. 4,000 were arrested that night. Within weeks, 25,000 were arrested and tortured in these wild concentration camps. 40,000 fled Germany. A threshold had been crossed in the name of national security, and everybody knew it. Police radicalization. German police were given large budgets now, received new weaponry and training, and were no longer constrained by the Constitution. Hearings before a judge were no longer required. Police were encouraged to settle old rivalries and arrest real or perceived enemies of the state under the so-called protective custody decree. Violence became the norm, a spectacle, reinforcing Hitler's assertion that the nation was under attack and that only the Nazis could act to save them because they had no compassion for those enemies and would act with an iron fist. Elections. On March 5, 1933, elections were held in this atmosphere of intimidation and fear, and still, the Nazi Party received only 43.9% of the vote, only 31.3% in Berlin. Hitler, of course, ignored that and declared victory anyway, And annulled communist seats in the Reichstag, having blamed them for the arson attack in the first place. Within days, the Reichstag fire decree was used to replace state officials and even overthrow the state government in Bavaria, silencing free speech. A few weeks later, on March 21, 1933, Hitler issued the decree against malicious attacks, which criminalized criticism of Hitler and stopped criminal investigations of any Nazi officials. On March 21st, that same day, the new parliament was seated with a choreographed propaganda day centered on Hindenburg and the German army. Later that day, news was announced of the opening of two new concentration camps, one in Dachau around Munich, run by the SS, and one at Oranienburg in Berlin, run by the Brown Shirts. Hitler enabled to become dictator. 3 days later, on March 24th, the Nazis forced through a law to remove the distress of the people and the state. The Enabling Act in the Reichstag that gave Hitler dictatorial power. My turn. We need to be concerned and at the same time confident. I'm cautious to draw direct parallels between Germany in the 1930s and us. There are too many different circumstances and contexts that do not apply. However, the echoes are getting louder. President Trump and his acolytes are not hiding the fact that they are heavily funding and arming a paramilitary force with orders to violate constitutional rights and safeguards that Steve Bannon said will be deployed around voting places in November. They are serious and are justifying these moves in ways that echo the 1930s. Unlike the 1930s, however, our police forces, though in Minneapolis, overwhelmed by the sheer number and brutality of ICE, are still protecting their communities. The military still operates in its traditional role, something that is quite different from the German military back then. The judiciary is still upholding the Constitution, and political opposition is strong. We have time to prepare because we recognize that we are at a turning point in the process. But we can no longer wish away or ignore what our government is telling us. Intimidation and anti-constitutional ideas and initiatives will continue to escalate. We are in the thick of it. We need to remain calm, firm, and unified. We need to pay attention to the power of peaceful protest and the examples of democratic power and dignity demonstrated in places like Oregon and Minnesota. We must continue to pressure our leaders to resist the construction of extra-legal ICE concentration camps and warehouses across the United States. Our response, rooted in our democratic history, is working and is a powerful force that those who came before us have given us. Each community has the power to say no. It has worked in our past, and it will continue to work in the present. Why were we shocked that the president posted a vicious racist image this week? Have we not been paying attention? There was nothing new here. We need to get beyond outrage and acknowledge what we know and ask better questions to get out of this mess. The question is not, did you see that Trump posted something racist, but why did the president post something so disgusting? If we recognize that he may have done so because he believes his base are racist, then we can engage our fellow citizens. We get to ask them, is it true what the president thinks of you? He says he represents you and your voice. Is that true? I suspect we and they might be surprised, for the most part, when they say no. You did notice that there was a backlash even from his base. Let's have confidence in each other, in what we know is right and wrong, and give space and dignity to our neighbors who need to be free to reclaim that. We have different opinions, but I know you aren't that buffoon. You can stand up for who you are. We, the people, in all our diversity and contradictions, believe in freedom and dignity. Peaceful protest and engagement in the coming weeks and months is power, and the glue that binds us in our experiment against tyranny.